This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
When walls go AWOL, you must exert your body in entirely different ways. I'm going to be talking today about the therapeutic nature of landing sites. And I thought the way I would construct it is to talk about notions of threshold, particularly the way that Arkangins use or approach the notion of threshold in their constructed works. So I'll be showing you images of their constructed works, but also this idea of different kinds of thresholds that they address. So, for example, different thresholds between modalities, different thresholds between scales, different thresholds between sort of paces or the possibility of initiating. Which is, I'm actually very interested in how we enact the things that Arkangins make available through this restructuring, reconfiguration of the category boundaries that we inhabit. So I'm trying to be as practical as I can, and I'm only going to bring theoretical people in to the sense to suggest that there is this kind of atmosphere around at the moment where these ideas become pertinent. So to begin, I think it's terribly important to think about this notion of initiating, the idea of how you initiate action. We know already from science that when you have the thought to pick up a cup, that there are everything is happening in micro fashion in your body to already adjust to the picking up of the cup. So in the sense that the way that language, the symbolizing character, and the perceptual character come together immediately in the initiating of an action is terribly important in the way of how you might initiate change. And this, to me, is the fascinating point, the moment that we have to get at for the beginning of a biotopology. So I've taken this quote from Leibniz. I found it just a lovely way to talk about endeavor as an infinitely small initiating. And I think that in order to begin infinitely small initiating, you have to actually work on these different scales. So sometimes it takes a very gigantic scale to begin the smallest type of initiating possible. So, landing sites used therapeutically, the parlaying of directness and indirectness, and in some sense, this notion of becoming omnidirectional, that in a sense, the fact that we can't become omnidirectional is our mistake, so that we have to move omnidirectionally in every sense. So, there are two types of initiating that I'm interested in today. One is initiating action, this notion that perception is action, that already when I am perceiving, I am acting, that there is bodily embodied functions, that it's a body-wide environmental situation that I'm engaging in, and it's not something that's separated and sequestered in a special place in the brain or somewhere else in virtuality. And then there is initiation of change, which I think is different than initiating action. And this is, of course, working across scales particularly, and this notion of the forming of forms. How do the forming of forms come about? So I am crossing over into this other notion of terminological junctions because I find that this important moment is described in different ways. The blank, forming blank, bottomlessness, destratification, the figural, and the calculus of indications. And from different points in contemporary research, these types of descriptions for me are important moments of the way in which we can start to begin this notion of initiating. So towards which and from which landing sites coordinate body-wide sensing and the beginning of biotopological endeavor. So the place that I think is interesting to start, and I'll just theorize this for a moment, is these paintings of Arakawa from the 60s that are called Bottomlessness. I spoke with Arakawa last year. I was in residency with them for 6 weeks in the New York studios, and I asked him about his fitness. He's remarkably fit person for being however old that he is, 300 years old or something. He described to me this meditation practice that he does that he calls bottomlessness. And it sounds very much to me like a destratification. And it's this sort of thinking into an openness. And he says, but you know, he added very quickly, but you have to be careful right at the end to pull back together, right? You know, so you can't just dissipate into the atmosphere. You actually have to pull back. And I went back through and I saw that there's quite a series of bottomlessness paintings where he actually is sort of diagrammatically depicting this. This reminded me of François Lyotard's notion of the figural. The figural is what I'm particularly interested in is the force that erodes the distinction between letter and line, open possibility and denotative meaning. And it's to me the moment of their notion of diagrammatic. where you're actually putting together the world that's moving between the perceptual and the symbolic, and that both of these actions are actual and taking place in the world in a situated way at the same time. So the diagram doesn't necessarily have to mean that you're doing this, but it's an easy way to illustrate it, that when I'm doing this, this isn't a virtual space, this isn't happening somewhere else, this is happening here as a model that may be projected elsewhere, but that there is an actuality that is happening here. There's a distinction in the world that takes place, that exists in the world. And so that when you move back and forth between it being a parenthesis and being a line in the air and being a movement of my hand, that this is, to me, the interesting moment that initiates open possibility, and that you have to hold this moment open. So these are the other bottomless paintings from Arakawa from 65. And then Deleuze and Guattari also talk about this. At the end of A Thousand Plateaus, they talk about the dangers of too sudden destratification. And they actually describe this in bodily terms. They say, look, you can become suicidal or cancerous if you destratify too quickly, right? And I don't know that this seems a little bit flowering, but I think that when you actually tap into this moment of initiation in the body, the moment of where you can tap into the non-distinction between physiology and cognition, that we actually open up these sort of possibilities that are dangerous as well as interesting. So this, because all constructions, including philosophical constructions, occur within both this notion of poiesis and organic autopoiesis. And so I've just brought in these two examples of that, where you have George Spencer Brown's calculus of indications that come from his book, The Laws of Form, where he has this, you know, very wonderful system of designation and non-designation. But again, this seems pre-Socratic to me. This seems like this line in the sand that Pythagoras is drawing is not somewhere else. This is here in the world. And this is a real distinction that we make. And then Varela's calculus of self and extended calculus of indications. He liked Spencer Brown's idea so much that he actually added a new symbol, the symbol of self-reference, where for me this is Arakawa and Ginza's re-entry. This is the possibility of perceiving perception and re-entering the space of that perception in order to get at that moment of initiating change. So we go on to landing sites. I'll just very quickly go through, again, it's this notion of the threshold that I'm interested in. I'm just going to talk briefly about a couple of different ones and end up with the Mitaka apartments that I visited last year. So one kind of threshold is this threshold of positionality. In the Bridge of Reversible Destiny, there is a point on the bridge that's called Gaze Brace, where they built a three-dimensional bird's-eye view of the room inside the room. So you are simultaneously in two places at the same time. You are in the room that you're seeing, and then you're seeing the top of the room inside the room. And so this kind of dysfunctioning positionality opens this moment of being in two places at once. It opens the moment of perceptual and conceptual processing. It makes the two things pass through each other, and they have to disrupt each other and reconfigure back in new ways. And that, to me, is a powerful tool for the way in which you can begin this. In the Bioskleef House, Arakawa and Ginza use images of totality to orient people in terms of their space. So the three examples of that are the table, which is the plan of the house, which is turned at 90 degrees, so that when you're sitting down, it's foreshortened. You have to kind of say, oh, I'm here, I'm there in the house. There's also on the ceiling of the bathroom, you're lying in the tub, floating. You're looking at the plan of the house. And again, there's this kind of translation. And the reading room project, there's a passage in Sean Gallagher's book, The Body Shapes the Mind, where he talks about the perceptual relationship of comprehension, that when you turn to the right, it's different than turning to the left. When you hear something in your right ear, it processes differently than your left ear. Anyone who's done figure drawing, you know that you have to draw open to the subject. If you cross over, it comes out in a different proportion because of the way it gets processed through the body, right and left, up and down. So that the way in which our posture is, the way in which we are positioned posturally in terms of taking on an image and relating ourselves to that as a graph, diagrammatically, is important and opens up these possibilities of initiating. So the Bioskleef House is a wonderful example of this kind of open field of initiating action, of this kind of infinitesimally small moments of breaking open the relationship between conceptual processing and perceptual learning and making these two things move through each other. I visited also the ubiquitous site, which is in Nagi. And this is a particularly interesting work. It's an early work that has a relationship to the Ryanji Zen garden in Kyoto. And these two, the garden is made onto the sides of the tube and oriented in different ways, right? So the garden that's there in Ryanji is put this way and then twisted and put that way. But what I found particularly disrupting, which is it's very nice in this disassembling, this de-stratification that happens, is you come up through the back, the bottom of the tube. You come up through the museum, and you walk up a spiral staircase that's tilted to the side, so that, in fact, you never get a sense of level. So from the outside, you can see that the tube is tipped at a quite a good degree on the slope. Right, so you imagine being in there and you can't quite tell how tipped you're going to be. But it's even more disorienting because you come up the spiral staircase. So you're walking around at a tilt, and you come up, and then you're tilted onto a thing. And you know that thing with, like, on a diving board, it always looks lower when you're down on the ground, and when you get up there, you think, oh, my God, how high is this? Right, so then you're at the bottom of this tube, and you walk up, and you think, oh, it's not so steep, and you turn around, and you think, oh, my God, it's very steep. And to accentuate this, they put the seesaw in the middle. But what is particularly interesting about the thresholds that are happening in here, is that the line that goes across the tube. So you're walking in a situation where you're constantly having to negotiate where you are in terms of level, where you are in terms of the middle of the tube, where you are in relation to the reversal of these two things. The last thing I'll say about this in relation to Ryanji is that Ryanji is this sort of strange situation where you're kept out of the garden. You're on the podium very much like this, looking into the garden. So, and you know from the Ryanji that you can't see all of the rocks from everywhere in the place. So you have to move up and down the podium. So there is a horizon and a limitation to the contemplation of the entire world that's brought into the actuality of the world, but you can't enter that. You can contemplate it, you can visually access it, but you can't enter the space of that. Whereas Narukawa Gin's suggests in this tube that, in fact, you're always in the middle of the constructing of the world. You're never outside the constructing of the world. It's not a place that's virtually somewhere else. That the world begins from the inside of the world, from the infinite centers of initiation, and not from an outside world that you access and bring into the world. And so I think that's an important critique of the Ryanji and a very important notion of threshold that they deal with. So thresholds between the spatial contemplation of the world and our ability to enter that space. The next notions of threshold that I'd like to deal with is at the sites of reversible destiny, this wonderful park in Euro. And I'll go right to this notion of threshold. This, for me, is the most threshing of our ability to hold. What Archon Gins have done in this, that I noticed in this particular site, is that it's the idea of beginning before you realize you've begun. So they begin the house, they begin the structure of the house, the furniture of the house, the floor of the house, the walls of the house have already begun before you're in the house. So that the spaces that are contiguous are made to interpenetrate, so that I'm already doing what I've already entered the space of reentry before I realize it. And this is a very powerful thing, as well as the manipulation of the horizon that's constantly happening through Yoro, and especially Yoro, but also through all their other works, where you're never able to get a horizon. Because especially on a curved surface, as you're walking, the horizon is changing with each of your steps. Right? So this is very important. And the dipping happens the same way. But then also you interpenetrate all the thresholds of each space, the categorical boundaries, between yourself and the outside, between the natural world, the constructed world, and the designed, tactically surrounded world. And you suddenly have this very powerful moment of opening and initiating. When I was walking around and there were other people in the park, there were two kinds of sounds that you heard. One was, and the other was laughter, just uncontrollable laughter, right? And this was wonderful because people were either, they were about to break their leg, or they were just happy to death that this was just so weird and they couldn't stand upright, you know. And this was lovely, you know. This seems to me a very appropriate or organismic response to the kinds of perceptual things that they were experiencing. So this is a sense of that the labyrinth that becomes the world that's already initiating. You have here the roof that begins underfoot, the walls that flower or where a distinction holds, the chair that settles on the rising sense of belonging. You have these things that are constantly inserting through each other. There's this wonderful phrase from the magazine that Andrew Benjamin put together, as the familiar passes through itself. And this, I think, is a wonderful notion of the way in which conceptual processing and perceptual processing mix, which the boundaries between our symbolic, sequestered notions of being virtual and our embodied sense of situatedness can't hold together. They have to interpenetrate each other. And I think that this approach to threshold is a terribly strategic, tactical way of doing this. So to move on to the Mitaka apartments, I use this little size 8 crocodile thing there. So you get it's a little bit smaller than my foot. You get a sense of scale. There's a very significant shift in the Mitaka apartments to the notion of threshold and how this notion of threshold is dealt with architecturally. The thresholds are very, very clear in the Mitaka apartments. In other words, the transition from one room to another isn't infinitely regressed, but in fact it's clear and sharp. And what happens instead is that there are 9 modules in the Mitaka apartments. You can see across there. And each of the modules has a different relation of the rooms to each other. They're oriented slightly differently, and the thresholds are slightly different. And what happens in talking with the residents there is they love to go into each other's apartments. And, you know, the kids are running around, and there's a healer that's working there, and the people who have an office, they stay there long hours. I think that's the idea. You know, they're happy to stay there. But they go into each other's apartment because it's actually slightly different. The thresholds are different. The risers are different. The way that the floor moves into this room as opposed to that room, that the circular room is slightly different than this one, that each room is different. So you get this, what Archangins call critical resemblances, that in fact, instead of now placing myself in a relation to this room because of the map is turned in a different way, I'm actually placing myself in this room in relation to this exact auditorium that's sitting next door that's oriented slightly differently. So it's a very different sense of dislocation that you're getting. And I think that these strategies of threshold are precisely this notion of how to bring about initiating through strategies of first dislocation and then that moment of pulling back together into a semblance of something that then can move through in a different way. So this is just a very quick idea. So you step onto the front of the threshold is slightly lower than when you step down into the room. And this measurement varies across the different apartments. The scaling of the sunken kitchen is slightly different. It's also perceptually very weird. You think that it's deeper than it is. You go down into there, and in fact, it's here. You come up outside, and you imagine it to be here because that's what your perceptual cues are suggesting to you. So in fact, the experience of this is when you can't actually hold on to something that tells you how big you are, you actually begin to change size. You change size all the time in the apartment. You change size in terms of how, because when you change size, then suddenly distance changes. And then the color doesn't allow you to focus on the change because the visuality of the color disrupts your ability to hold on to the distances. So at every point, kinesthetically, proprioceptively, visually, you're getting this mix between how you have to connect the senses. And this is terribly, terribly important for initiating. If you can connect the senses in a slightly different modality, you can actually exert yourself in different ways. So these thresholds are the way in which to initiate that kind of possibility of change. So this is the bathroom where you actually have to go around the shower like this to get to the toilet, which in some circumstances is a bad thing. But each of the rooms has these sort of different, very, very, what you would think to be conventional shapes. We know these shapes. It's a tube, it's a sphere, it's a square, but they're made unfamiliar to us. They're made in such a way that the initiating of our relationship with them is not at all clear. And that's also the power of them. The threshold between the info obtained via proprioception and the information obtained kinesthetically. I think that this is terribly important, that things change under transformation, And that as things change in our ability to sense where we are and our relation to them, that when they're constantly shifting and when the information is coming in that's conflicting with the last bit of information, that you can't hold any longer, that there is this, the threshing of the hold, right? And I find this to be just a wonderful experience. The visual orientation and the organism of the person. Okay, that was actually supposed to be all together. So this idea of what's happening through is proprioceptive, kinesthetic, and visual are the three things that are passing through each other, as well as any symbolizing character that you're trying to hold on to. And this, for me, is what moves towards the atmospheric intricateness. This is what allows you to connect in a way that doesn't obey the strict guidelines of your boundary, the categorical boundaries of your person, and begins to connect with other parts of the environment. And this is in the smallest way, in the smallest notion of initiating, in the true sense of endeavor. This is the way in which you begin to have a sense of becoming atmospheric. So as the familiar passes through itself, observing, learning, reconfiguring, and thereby initiating change. So to conclude, there's the strategy of the tactic of bottomlessness. At the molecular level, the embodied cognition becomes atmospheric and intricateness at the communal level. So I think there is this change of what happens before the social is in fact the thing that helps us in the social. To have the sense of my ability to become atmospheric is also then my ability to commune with other people. And that there's a jump in scale, and I think we have to notice this jump in scale. There's a jump in scale between reading and our ability to understand how language operates in the world. Because there is no figurative scale of language. There's only the gigantic scale of the structures of the world which we see confined by language or constrained by language. And there's the atoms of excitement that happen in terms of language and the way that it prompts embodied, body-wide sensation in our experience. And I think we don't recognize when there's that skip in scale. The second one is the blank forms as tentative organism person surrounds bottomless in every direction. This is this notion of becoming omnidirectional. And finally, the threshold of initiating opens as the thresholds of scale break down. So for me, that this tactic of how to bring about initiation begins when you start to conflate our ability to understand scale, especially scale I've found in my experience, that when that starts to conflate, I can't actually hold myself together in the same way at all. Thank you.